are new, my name is Tim, and I'm the lead pastor here. And we're kind of in the beginning of a series called Me in Three. We kind of kicked off the new year as most of us are all thinking, hey, it's a new year. It's a time for us to what? We're going to get back on the horse, we say, because somehow we got off the horse at the end of the last year. We're gonna do all the things that we knew we should have been doing, but we weren't doing. We've got all the things that we're going to change, the things we're going to get. We are motivated at the beginning of every year. We are. And then what happens? We have all this intensity, and then 3 weeks, 2 weeks, maybe it's a month, maybe 2-3 months into it, we just have dropped it all. We're like, forget it. We're just trying to survive another year. We decided, let's take a different approach. And this idea of me in three is really, it kind of comes from this quote that I heard maybe 10 years ago, and I've never forgotten it. It's the idea that we often overestimate what we can do in the short term, but we also underestimate what we could do in the long term. I think a lot of times we are very short-minded when we think of ourselves and what we're going to do, and we've got all this intensity, and then it's so difficult to change that we just drop it all. What I think is more effective is if we didn't think, okay, by the end of this year, I'm going to have my life together, and I'm going to be making this kind of money, and I'm going to be in this kind of shape. But what if we just started to put into practice thinking, you know what? If I just start one thing now and I keep consistent doing it, something powerful can happen, maybe not in 1 year, but possibly in 3 years or more. And so this is the idea. I'm trying to get you to think about you in 3 years. That's what me in three is. I want us to dream a little bit. Now, last week as we kicked off this conversation, we looked at a psalm, a prayer by a guy named Moses. It was Psalm 90. And one of the things that we see in Psalm chapter 90 is that Moses, probably toward the end of his life, is looking back with hindsight, going, oh, I feel like maybe I wasted my life. In fact, there's this one psalm, this one verse that I just kind of encouraged us all. I said, if you want something to do spiritually this year, memorize a verse. Psalm 90 verse 12 would be a great one. It's kind of the key verse for the series. And Moses said this, to God, teach us to number our days that we might gain a heart of wisdom. In other words, God, don't let my life pass me by without me taking an inventory and realizing how important every moment is. How special the 70, maybe 80 possibly years that you've given me so that I can do the most with my life and I can make the biggest significance in this world. And so we began this series talking about that. Now, here's what I'm really asking you to do. I'm asking you and I'm inviting you to start to think, to imagine, and to dream, what would your life look like in 3 years? So what if we fast forward from 2024 to 2027? If you could draw up your life, if you could write it out, if you could write it out and draw up the picture perfect you in 3 years, can I ask this? Like, what would it look like? And in fact, let me say it this way. What would it be like if you could imagine your life? What would heaven be in 2027? Let me say it that way. What would it be like for your life? I picture heaven in 2027. I'm not talking about being dead and in heaven. I'm talking about if your life could be what you always imagined or hoped it would be in 2027. If it's January 2027, you were to look back and you go, oh my, this is what I hoped. I don't know what you would imagine. Would you imagine that you're debt-free? That'd be awesome, wouldn't it? Would you imagine you're in the greatest health you've ever been in? Would you? Would you imagine that you've grown your business to a certain point, that you've hired people and you got a couple vans going out and doing stuff? What would you imagine? Would you imagine yourself graduated and starting into a job or career? Would you imagine yourself having a little kid running around the house? What would you imagine? What would be heaven in 2027? The reason why I want you to think this way is because we're going to do something with it next week. I think next week. Well, I'm going to have a little bit of an exercise for us all to do where I want to help you begin to roadmap, to write it out, to kind of imagine, but then what are the steps? Like, what would your life be? Who are you going to be in 2027? Because we overestimate what we can accomplish in the short term, but we underestimate what consistency can do in the long term. Now, as you're thinking and imagining your life in 3 years, I want to warn you and put a guardrail up against a trap. Whenever somebody's ever said to me, "All right, Tim, what do you picture your life like in 5 years? What do you imagine in 10 years? When you retire, you know?" Immediately, can I just say what my mind goes to? I immediately start thinking of career goals. You probably do too. I immediately start thinking of family goals. I immediately start thinking about, you know, maybe one day you're, depending on where you're in life, well, I imagine being out of school and having kids and settled down and having a cute vent, you know, house and a yard and all this stuff. Those are good things. Nothing wrong with that. You know, I imagine that my business is going to be super successful and we're going to be doing great financially. There's nothing wrong with that. But can I just warn you, there is a trap with that. And the trap is when you imagine your life 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road, be careful that you don't just imagine all of the things that you want to accomplish when it comes to your career goals, when it comes to your family goals, when it comes to your health goals, when it comes to, all those things are great. I hope you do have plenty of them. But I think it's a trap because most of us can spend our entire lives thinking about what we're doing financially, what we're doing with our family, what we're doing with our future plans, and never stop to ask God, "God, what did you create me to do?" That's the trap. The trap in our culture is that we never stop and say, "God, what's your purpose for my life?" Some of us could roadmap out a really, really productive 3 years. But can I just tell you, you can be really productive in the next 3 years, but not actually produce anything of eternal value. That would be a shame. We could build really successful lives in the eyes of the world, but never do something significant that would leave an impact for future generations. I don't know about you, but I don't want that to be my story. I don't want to be that, well, he lived, and he had a good career, and he raised some good kids, and he retired, played some golf, got decent at it, and then died. That, to me, seems like a terrible story. I think sometimes we never pause to say, "God, hold on. Who am I going to be in 3 years? What if we never stop to think, God, what did you create me for?" And so today, as we really frame this year and the next 3 years, here's my challenge to you. This is the one thing I want you to think about today, and that's this question. What is God's calling on my life? What is God's calling on my life? Can you answer that? What is God's calling on your life? See, I think sometimes we hear that question, and maybe we are kind of like, I don't know. I think sometimes that's really challenging. What is God's call on your life? And if I could be honest, just really honest, I guess I should say, I'm always honest. I shouldn't say that because that sounds like I'm lying half the time. But just something, you know, communicators say. But I was struggling with this message and the concept all week. And even till today, I was struggling because the cynical side of me, and I have a cynical side, the cynical side of me who's been in ministry for a real long time and have had a lot of conversations with people is that it feels like anytime someone mentions the word calling that we immediately think, oh, you mean like to be a pastor? You mean to be in full-time ministry, vocational ministry? You mean working for a church? You mean a full-time missionary? You mean like one of those traveling evangelists? No, that's not for me. You mean like, no, I don't mean those things. And I feel like sometimes there's a disconnect, if I could just be real frank, there's a disconnect with many of us who have said yes to Jesus, but then when you hear about calling, you're like, well, that's for the pastor. I'm not a preacher. I'm not called to do that. Can I push back on that if that's the way you think today? Can I violate your reality when you think, oh, that's for the pastor? No, it is not just for the pastor. It's for you too. God's call on your life is just as significant as his call on my life. He has a purpose for your life. I see this theme all throughout Scripture over and over about you and about me is that we are not accidents of nature, but we're purposed by a creator. That you are fearfully and wonderfully made. That every day of your life was ordained and written down in front of God before you breathe your first breath. That God has a purpose for your life. It's not just for pastors. It's for all of us. In fact, I love what Ephesians 2:10 says. Can I read this verse to you? I love this passage. Just let this just seep into your spirit today. Ephesians 2:10 says, "For we are God's handiwork." You're a masterpiece, one translation says, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, not just to have a career and eventually retire, but to do good works which God prepared in advance for us to do. Do you know what this means? God has a purpose for you. If you're a follower of Jesus, he has something that he has prepared you for, and he has prepared it for you that he wants you to walk in. He invites us into changing this world for his kingdom, not just to make it through. And I don't know what that looks like in your life. And some of you would go, I don't know what it means to have a calling. Can I just tell you, for some of you, maybe it looks like God's called you and gifted you and wired you for leading. And so maybe you're going to be called to be a leader and eventually a leader of leaders. Maybe God has called you to invest in the next generation. And every time you see a young person, and maybe you're a teacher, maybe you got that as a profession right now, but what drew you into that was to make a difference in someone's life. Can I just say something? You're not just a teacher. God's put something in you to pass on to the next generation. There's something deeper than just my profession. It's my calling. It could be that God didn't just create you and wire you in a way that you could be successful in business, but maybe he's wanting you to be a faith leader in the marketplace. There's a difference. You can run a business and be successful, or you can represent Jesus in every room you go into. Maybe it is to transform every space you go into. Maybe it is to bring joy into every room you go into. I don't know what your calling is, but I'm asking you, do you know? Because I imagine that if I sat down with each of you and we had coffee one day and I asked you directly, I said, do you know what God's calling is on your life? I imagine that many of you would maybe go, I'm not sure, to be honest. Because you know what I've discovered? It is a struggle to figure it out. I wish that I just like, and this has never happened for me, but I wish that I just either had a real clear vision or God showed up and audibly spoke to me and said, Tim, this is my purpose for you. Wouldn't that be great? Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, other than the fact that you told people they think you're strange, but wouldn't that be awesome if God, but here's what I've discovered. It doesn't happen like that. I wish we all, in a way, had like an Apostle Paul moment, you know, where light shone out of heaven, knocked you off your animal. Well, I don't think you'd be on an animal today, but maybe in your car, and it blinded you for a moment. God's like, here's what I want you to do. But it doesn't happen that way for most of us. Did you know what I have discovered? In my experience, this is what I have discovered. You find your calling after you start following. You find your calling. Some of you go, I would love to know what my calling is. I'm telling you, you find your calling after you start following. And of course, I'm talking about following Jesus. You know what I also discovered at a young age when I graduated high school? The truth is, I wasn't following Jesus. I've been around church my whole life. I knew who Jesus was and believed. But if I could be real with you, I wasn't actually following Jesus. And so can I just tell you, it was a real struggle for me to discover what my calling was. If you don't know him, it's really hard to discover what he created you for. And I would struggle out of high school. I'm like, I don't know what I want to do. And someone's like, why don't you go to college? I'm like, okay, I guess. So I enrolled in local community college. One semester, I took one class. Guess what? I had no idea what I felt like God called me to do or what I wanted to do, so I dropped out of school. Nope, wasn't for me. And I went from job to job to job, and I pursued different. I mean, I went through this iteration of my life of, you know, I got a job working in an accounting office, and I was like, maybe that's it. So I rolled back in school. Now, I took two classes this time. One of them was accounting. Guess what I did at the end of that semester? Dropped out again. That's not for me. I went through all of these things trying to find it. And if I could just be honest, like, you know what really helped me? was when I truly started to follow Jesus. It was the moment when I said, Jesus, I surrender my life and my future to you. Wherever you are leading me, show me and I'll go. And that's what started to open up me to understand my calling. And I want to just challenge us as we're thinking about not just 1 year, but even in 3 years. I want to invite you to think deeply about your calling. What is it that God's really called you, wired you, shaped you, created you, gifted you to do for him while you're on this earth? Now, today, I want to still look, if you got your Bible, something I think will be challenging, if I could be honest, but hopefully helpful. I want us to look at Luke chapter 9. And in this passage that I'm going to read to you, I want to share something from Jesus' perspective on three challenges that I think we all have to overcome to discover our calling and to truly follow Jesus. So if you're here and you're like, I'm not really sure about following Jesus, well, today it's going to make it real for you. But here's what I really believe, that your calling comes on the other side of starting to follow. And so what does it look like to really follow Jesus? I'm not talking about you go to church. I'm not talking about you believe in him. I'm talking about following Jesus. And I think there are three obstacles Jesus points out, three challenges for us that we'll never discover our calling until we push beyond these challenges. Luke chapter 9, it outlines three distinct interactions that Jesus has. Now, let me give you the context, because I'm going to tell you what I'm going to read to you today. You're going to walk away going, I think Jesus is kind of a jerk. I know, that sounds awful. There's no way I could ever think that. I agree. We won't think that when we're done. But when I read these to you, if you don't understand the context, it's hard to understand what Jesus is getting at. Okay? Jesus, with his disciples, I think it's in verse 51. Don't get me, I didn't have this verse to put up. But Jesus realizes his calling, and he knows it, is ultimately the cross. And Jesus grabs his disciples, and it says that he turns resolutely and moves toward Jerusalem. Am I right on that? 951, right? Thank you, Greg. He moves, in other words, Jesus grabs his disciples, and he says, guys, we're going to Jerusalem. It was his calling. He came for the purpose of dying for you and me. And it's on this journey, as they're walking, they run into some people. At least Luke seems to lead us to believe that. And this interaction happens. Look at verse 57, 58 first. It says, as they were walking along the road, a man said to him, Jesus, I will follow you wherever you go. Man, don't you love it when people are just so enthusiastic about following Jesus? Gosh, they're just all in. Look at verse 58. Jesus replied, foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Is that not a weird answer? Let's be honest. Somebody's like, I'm with you, Jesus, all in. I'll follow you. And Jesus is like, let me talk about animals. It's strange. Let's be honest. In fact, I think this whole interaction's weird. I'm picturing in my mind Jesus and his disciples walking along a dusty road, and these other people come up, and one guy recognizes Jesus. He's like, oh, that's Jesus. He's the guy who's doing miracles. He's the guy who's teaching. He's the guy, like everybody's saying, he might be the one, the Messiah. And so this guy yells out, hey, Jesus, man, I'll follow you wherever you're going. Now remember, where's Jesus going? Oh, the cross. He's like, you want to go? You want to follow? This is what he's doing in this moment. And he points out, and we're going to show this in three different exchanges. And here's the first one. He says, there is a cost to follow me into your calling. And the first cost is comfort. It's comfort. You know what I've discovered about Americans? We are creatures of comfort. We are obsessed with comfort. I agree. I like being comfortable, don't you? Like, we are obsessed with it, you know? We will buy six pairs of running shoes trying to find one that has the right arch support. I mean, we will. We're obsessed with comfort. We will spend money, lots of money, to get the perfect bed. I'm talking about the one that's got the right amount of firmness, but the nice softness on top. It's got pillow top. We're going to put a memory foam on top. We're going to do all that. I just want the perfect bed to sleep in. And we want just the perfect pillow that's not too lumpy, not too hard. It stays cool at night. I mean, we are obsessed with comfort, are we not? You know, one of the things I found really funny about fashion trends, like this one's great. Have y'all noticed that the latest fashion trend is big, baggy, and comfortable, oversized? This thing's way too big for me, right? It's oversized, it's big, and it's baggy, okay? Before that, it was cut your circulation off skinny jeans. Y'all remember that? I was just talking to somebody. I was like, man, this new fashion trend is great. You know, especially in the winter months when you pack a few extra on. You know, you got baggy sweatshirts. You know what's in? Sweatpants and athletic pants. I mean, people are wearing that to go out to dinner. I mean, this is crazy, and I know some of you are going, no, actually, it's not. That's been in my wardrobe for the last 20 years. I'm just so glad to be on trend again. Like, we love comfort, don't we? And so this guy's like, man, I'll follow you anywhere. And Jesus says, wait, hold on. You need to know this. Even foxes, they've got a den they can go to where they have safety and where they can rest. And oh, birds got a nest. Birds, they have a nest where they go to that is perched high up, away from predators. It's safe, it's comfortable, it's warm. He's talking about home. He's talking about comfort. He's talking about rest. And he says, the Son of Man, he's referring to himself. He says, no place to lay his head. In other words, there is a massive cost with following Jesus, and that it will stretch you and take you far beyond what is comfortable. And I don't mean to be a little bit like, I don't know, confrontational today. But I think somehow in America, we've landed at some place where I can have all the comforts in the world and I'm gonna follow Jesus. I will follow you, Jesus, as long as it doesn't make me uncomfortable. As long as it doesn't ask me to do something that makes me uncomfortable. This is kind of where we've landed in Western society. I'll follow you as long as it's not too bad. Can I just tell you something about following Jesus in your calling? You gotta hear this. Stepping into your calling will require you to step out of comfort. Stepping into your calling. If you're here today, you're like, I've been wanting to know what's my purpose. I really wanted to know. Stepping into your calling will require you to step out of comfort. Following Jesus is gonna take you to some really uncomfortable places. When you say, I'm all in. See, I prayed that prayer when I was 17 years old. And I meant it. When I was 17, I made a decision. I said, it wasn't a decision about who Jesus is. No. It was a decision about surrendering my life to follow after him. And I said to him, I said, Jesus, you can have my life. Wherever you lead me, I will go. Let me just warn you, that's a dangerous prayer. It's dangerous. Because Jesus said, if you want to follow me, it'll cost you being comfortable. And you know, I've discovered my calling has continually pushed me away from comfort, even in leading this church. I remember when we launched this church, and it was just a few weeks before we were gonna launch and have our first weekend, and we built this place up, and we're getting ready to do it, and we were gonna gather on a Sunday, and I realized I gotta preach my very first sermon. I've never preached a full sermon. I was scared to death. I'm getting up in front of people that know the Bible, and I've gotta get up there and somehow teach. I don't know, I'm scared to death doing this. But I was never gonna discover my calling if I didn't push beyond what made me uncomfortable. It's been so many things like that. Leading has made me so uncomfortable. Leading a church, leading an organization. I've had to do so many things that I'm so uncomfortable with. When our church finally bought our first building, I had to invite people to give, to sacrifice, to buy into this vision. Hey guys, if we do this, I'm telling you, God's gonna show up. I mean, I hope he shows up. I mean, like, I think he'll show up. Like, I don't know. We might just screw the whole thing up. That's what I felt. Do you know how scary these moments have been for me? Building this building, scary. I mean, I wrote a book about it. This is how scared I've been my entire journey of following Jesus. But I also believe that's the point. It's learning not to trust in what makes you comfortable, but to trust him as he takes you into it. And I'm just telling you, if you say, I want to know my purpose and I want to discover what God's created me to do, you're going to have to push beyond what's comfortable. So when somebody looks at you and they say, hey, have you thought about serving in this area? Oh, I don't know if I could. Have you thought about leading a circle? No, I don't know the Bible enough to lead a study. I knew I couldn't do this. Like, you have to be willing to push beyond comfort. It's the cost of following Jesus. The second one, the second cost, this is the challenge, the obstacle of following Jesus to your calling is convenience. It's convenience. You know, I used to always think about our culture. I used to always say we're a consumer-based society. You know, we have a consumer-based economy. Like, everything we do is all based on buying things. We all love buying things. We're obsessed with buying things. I used to think that that was like the ultimate god in America, is buying stuff. And I started to notice a change in our society about 5 years ago. And I think we've actually shifted from a consumer-based society to a convenience-based society. That we're actually more obsessed with convenience than we are maybe even comfort and consuming and buying things. I mean, you think about our world we have today, thanks to the internet, right? We can live our lives almost completely without ever leaving our homes. Think about it. When has there ever been a time in history where you could make a living from home? I could ask right now, and I bet you there's a bunch of you in this space that you work from home. Now we get to work from our houses. I don't have to work, leave my house. I can wear pajama pants all day and maybe even a pajama top unless I got to get on a Zoom call. Then I'm going to put on a button down so I look like I'm all professional, right? We've never had a day and age when you don't have to leave your house. You can work from home. I mean, think about this. Your entertainment. You can stream every show, every movie, don't have to leave the house. In fact, new movies that get released, you can watch them almost the day they get released at home. How great is that, right? Got your home theater at home. You don't need to leave the house for anything. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, you get to buy your groceries and have them delivered. What's it, Click It? What's the other ones? I don't know, Shipt or whatever. There's all these ones. You can have people from Meijer, from Kroger, bring your groceries to your house. I don't even have to walk down the grocery store anymore. This is the greatest thing ever. And oh, by the way, shopping? Huh. Man, Amazon changed the game. Hello? I mean, I give my tithe. My very next purchase is Amazon Prime membership. Hello? Like, I got to get this stuff in 2 days or less. And if it don't get here in 2 days, I'm mad. Screaming mad, okay? Like, we are obsessed with this. You can get your favorite food delivered to your door, dashed right to your door, right in minutes. Boom, your favorite meal's at your house. Listen, it's so convenient. You don't even have to get into your car on a cold Sunday morning and go to church. You can stream it right into your house. I mean, I'm just saying, we're about convenience. Convenience is changing the game in America. You know, Starbucks, your favorite coffee place, Starbucks in 2017 logged its first year flat profits. In year 2017, they had a full year flat in profits. And they're all freaking out. What are we going to do? Every year they'd grown. In year 2017, things got flat. And they came, put together a plan to grow Starbucks. You know what the plan was? Offer delivery. Now, this is what they started rolling out in 2018. Guess what happened? Their profits started to go up. In 2018, they started to roll this out, and they found out that people would pay an additional $8 or $10 to have their venti triple shot caramel macchiato, I can't even say it, the stupid drinks with whip. You ever tried to order at Starbucks? You just want to kill yourself. I want a large. We don't do that. All right, give me the grande. No, that's not large. Okay, I don't know Italian. I'm sorry. People were paying $8 to $10 to have their $6 drink delivered to the office. And it worked. Why? Because we as Americans, we're obsessed with convenience. And listen, Jesus knows that. And I think not just with Americans, this is just with any of us. That's why this next exchange happened. Look at the next verses. Verse 59, it says, and he said to another man, hey, follow me. But he replied, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. And Jesus said to him, "Let the dead bury their own dead." I'm not sure how that works, but he says, "But you go and proclaim the kingdom of God." Now, admit, this seems a little bit harsh. This is why I said you're going to read this about Jesus and you're going to be like, he was having a bad day. He was bothered. He was, no, that's not actually what's going on. You see, this guy's father hadn't really died. This was more of a phrase. This was a concept of what he was saying to Jesus. You have to understand in this culture that when a family member, someone you love died, they would bury them usually within 24 hours or less, sometimes within a few hours. This is a very hot climate. They had no way to preserve bodies. You get the picture. It's not good. It does not smell good. It's not good. This is not one of those moments where Jesus sees a funeral procession and there's a guy who's going to bury his dad and Jesus is like, "Hey, follow me." It's like, "I'm in the middle of something. Can we just put dad in the ground?" No. Here's what most scholars believe. This was actually a way, a phrase of what he's saying to Jesus is, "I will follow you, but first, I want to live a little bit. I will follow you one day. I will follow you someday." It could be that he was waiting in line someday when his dad passed so that the full entire estate came his way. In other words, "I'll follow you someday, just not today." This is what he's really saying to Jesus. But let me say something that I've really discovered. Many of you, I know you've discovered this. Following Jesus will rarely ever be convenient. It just won't. There are times when you're going to see an opportunity to serve somebody in need. There's going to be an opportunity when a friend is going to ask you to help them move. There's going to be an opportunity at church where there is a need where you can step in and serve and use your gifts. And you're going to be like, "I would, but man, I just don't know if I give up that extra time." I promise you, following Jesus, there's going to be an opportunity to give money to somebody in need in your circle. You're going to see somebody at work struggling financially. Something's going to, and you're going to have an opportunity. And let me tell you something. It is almost every time. It's never convenient. Whoo, things are tight. I mean, I would help, but I don't know if I could do that right now. It's never convenient. There's times when following Jesus is going to invite you to sacrifice your life. And you're going to have plans. But first, I will one day, someday, but first I've got plans. We're building our business. We're doing all this. One day we're going to retire and we're going to sell it and then we're going to be generous. And Jesus said, no, it doesn't work that way. You seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness first. And all these things that you are worried about, I'll help you. I'll take care of them. So the first cost is comfort. The second cost of following Jesus in your calling is convenience. And the third cost is commitment. It's a commitment to follow Jesus into your calling. An all-in type of commitment. That's what happens in this next interaction Jesus has with somebody. In Luke 9, verse 61, it says, "Still another said, 'I'll follow you, Lord.'" And it's hard to tell if Luke's putting all these together and they happened in one moment or over different times, and he just puts them together. But here's another one. It says, "I'll follow you, Lord, but first, let me go back and say goodbye to my family." In verse 62, Jesus replied, "No one who puts a hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God." Again, I get it. Jesus kind of comes across a little harsh and insensitive. "I'll follow you, but let me go back and let me just spend a little time with my family. Let me hug them. Let me kiss them. Let me say goodbye." I don't think that is what Jesus was getting at in this moment. I think he was pushing beyond to a deeper level. And what he's talking about is he says, "Listen, if you want to follow me, it's an all-in commitment. You can't look back. There's no going back. There's no looking back. No one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back as fit for service in the kingdom of God. You know, this verse has a real special significance in mine and my wife's journey and our calling and leading this church. You may not know this, but back in 2003, we set out to launch this church, and we had felt like, again, following Jesus, it was one step after another. And we felt like he made it clear that we're to start a church, and so we did with a small group of people. And I was working for the state of Ohio at the time in information technology and had a good job, and it paid well. I had insurance and benefits. In fact, most people that go to work for the state, they retire working for the state. It's just one of those things. It's a safe job. It's a secure job. And we started this church. And slowly but surely, you probably know the story, a lot of you, the church started to grow. And about 4 years into it, our church had reached about 100 people. I'm still working full-time outside of the church. We're leading the church. We're trying to grow and reach people in the church. And my board came to me in January of 2007 and said, "Tim, we think it's time for you to go full-time in ministry." I said, "Really? You think it's time?" I said, "Yeah, we think it's time. The church has grown. We think we can afford it. We think it's important to the next step of whatever God has for our church." And so I went back to my wife, and we started talking about it. I said, "Hey, the board thinks it's time for me to quit my job and go full-time." And it's one thing to have a church that's brand new, and it's paying the rent, and we didn't have a lot of people, but I had a paycheck from another job that I did that was security, had insurance from a job for the family that was protection. It was all these things that we needed, and yet going to work for the church meant, well, we're going to give you a salary, but here's the reality, what I know when you have a small church. Your biggest giver leaves, you could be in trouble making the mortgage or paying the staff. Okay, I was aware of all that. So this is a step of faith. And so we started talking about it, and I was praying about it, and I told her eventually, I said, I think I'm ready to do this. And she looked at me, she said, I don't know. What are we gonna do about insurance? What are we gonna do about this? What if this happens? And we were having all these conversations. In February of that year, we went to a conference in Texas. And on our way back from this conference, we're flying at 35,000 feet. You remember this, honey? She remembers this moment because this was kind of her moment more than anything else. We're flying at 35,000 feet in the air, and I'm just minding my own business. And I think back then you couldn't stream TV while you're on the plane. So I'm reading, I'm doing whatever. And out of the blue, she nudges me. And she leans over and she said, "I think it's time." I said, "What?" "I think you should go full time." I said, "Really? What prompted that?" And she said to me, she said, "I was reading in my Bible." And as she was reading, she read Luke 9:62. She said, "I was reading this verse, and Jesus said about following him, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for service in the kingdom of God." She said, "We got to go all in. No safety net. I don't know what'll happen. I walk away from a job in the state, you're not getting it back. But we have to just trust God and go." And that's what we did in 2007. We did. And guess what? Every day, every year since then, we've just been putting our hand to the plow, not looking back, trusting God. And what I'm saying is, I started to discover my unique calling, but here's what it looked like. I had to push beyond what made me comfortable. I had to be okay with it being inconvenient. It didn't happen at the best time, okay? And then we had to go all in. And when you do that, following Jesus, he begins to reveal things about your calling and your purpose step by step. It doesn't just show up one day. I'm just going to be honest with you. But it's a journey that I've been on, I'm still on. And so I'm asking you, as we begin this and we really talk about the next 3 years, I hope that you achieve your business goals and your family goals and your financial goals. I hope all that happens, but I hope that what doesn't take a backseat to that is your purpose. God, what'd you create me for? I want to leave an impact in this world, and I imagine you do too. I'm asking you, what is heaven in 2027? Because listen, your business could be the best it's ever been in 2027, but you don't feel like heaven. That's true. You could be closer to retirement than you've ever been because you've been working hard toward it, but it not feel like heaven. I'm telling you, you know what feels like heaven? Knowing your purpose and walking in it. Do you know what feels like heaven? Is trusting God and walking out your life's calling. That feels like heaven. And God's been teaching me some things. I'll close with this. God's been teaching me some things over the last few years about my calling. Because there's also a temptation to attach your calling to your season that you're in or your career. Your calling is not just attached to a single season. Here's what I found. In different seasons of life, my role and what I've done, my job, my things have changed. My calling is bigger than that. One season, your focus might be to create a foundation of faith for your children. And you're investing in that. That's powerful. But your calling is maybe even bigger than just that. And from season to season, and as your life, as you go through different seasons, you got to be careful you don't attach your calling to your career, your profession. This is what I felt like God was speaking to me about recently. You know, we just celebrated last year 20 years as a church, and it's significant. And I'm grateful for the journey and what God's done. And I started praying, and I was talking to God, and I'm like, God, maybe we'll do another 20. And I'm calculating my age and going, you know, there's going to come a day when they're going to be like, can we get this old guy out of the way and bring someone in younger? I get it. And you know what I always say? This church is his church. It's not mine. Success for me is one day being able to get out of the way and this church still thriving. That's what I believe. I'm just a part of the story that God's creating on earth through his church. We are a part of that story. And so I started to wrestle with, I don't know if it's just getting older and my kids moving out of the house and getting married and having grandkids. I'm going through a late midlife cry. I don't know what's going on. But I'm like, God, I know my calling. It's the pastor X church. And God said, no, it's not. What do you mean? It's the pastor X church. No, he says, that's what you're doing right now. But that's not just your calling. Because Tim, one day you're not going to be pastoring this church. I don't know when that day is, someday. And trust me, there's no announcement coming. I'm not letting you leave. I'm just telling you what God's been speaking to me. That one day, Tim, you're not going to pastor this church. And if you put your identity in your career and think that's your calling, you are going to be missing something big time when you're not doing it. My calling isn't just a pastor. That might be what I'm doing in this season of my life. Can I say this to you? Your calling might not just be to run your business. It might be deeper than that. Your calling might not just be a nurse. It might be deeper than that. Although it might include that for a season. And God had to remind me of the verse that he gave me when I felt him call me. I remember where I was. I was young. I was probably in my early 20s. And I was driving along the road in my car by myself. I was in Pickerington. I can picture it to this day. And the Spirit of God dropped a verse in my heart. I'm like, what is this for? And I felt like God speak to me and say, this is your calling. And for me, again, I'm just sharing my own personal journey. We all have our own. But for me, it was John 15:16. When Jesus was with his disciples before he went to his calling, the cross, and he spoke to him and he said, you did not choose me. So he said to his disciples, you think you picked me? Yeah, I remember 17, I said, I'll follow you. No. You didn't choose me, I chose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit, and fruit that lasts. And God reminded me just recently, a couple years ago, Tim, I called you to bear fruit, eternal fruit. You know what I realized? I can do that if I'm pastoring this church or if I'm not. I can do that when I'm 70 years old. I could do that when I'm 23 years old. And so I don't know what your calling is, but your identity is that you are a son and daughter of the Most High, of Jesus Christ. That's your identity. You don't step into your calling so that you can become something for Him. You can't get any higher than son or daughter. There's nothing higher. But what you can do is respond to the invitation to be part of something God's doing in this earth that will last through all eternity. And so here's what it might look like. You might be a nurse. That's an amazing profession. But maybe your real calling is to care for people in their most vulnerable moments. And if so, you can do that wherever you go. It may not be to grow a business, to be really big one day and sell it and be able to relax and enjoy life. I hope that happens for you. But what if it is to represent Jesus in the business world? What if it is to create an environment where everybody comes in, knows, hey, we're going to run this organization different than anybody else might. We're going to represent, put Jesus first. Maybe that's a calling. I want to transform every space I go into. What is it? I knew somebody once and they found out that their calling, regardless of what they were doing, was to bring joy into every room they went into. What if maybe you're the positive, uplifting, encouraging person because God's given you a gift and wired you that way? Maybe your calling is to be an encourager. So everywhere you go, I can do that at work. I can do that at home. I can do that when I'm checking out the grocery store. Like everybody, one of us that just checks out and says, thank you. You go, no, I'm going to look for an opportunity to encourage this person. What is your calling? I just really believe maybe over these 3 years, the greatest thing that we could do, you know what heaven is in 2027 when you get there? Is for us to begin to see the calling of God in our life and to take a step into that. Amen, church? That's what I want for us. That's what I want for all of us. Come on, why don't you stand to your feet? I'd love for us to have a moment with God. I'd love for you to have a moment with God. As we're thinking about the next 3 years of our life, and maybe you're thinking 5, 10, doesn't matter. I want to invite you just to bow your heads. Let's close our eyes. Let's lean into God in this moment. God, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that you care about us so much, that you created us with a unique purpose, a divine calling. God, I pray for those that are here today that maybe have never taken the step to follow after you, Jesus. You know, as we're praying, the reality is I don't think you'll ever discover who you really are and who you were made to be until you first start following Jesus. And I told you my story. I was around church my whole life when I was younger. But if I was completely honest, I wasn't really following Jesus. That all in, I'm running after you. Wherever you want me to go and do with my life, it's yours. I put it in your hands. Maybe some of you today, that needs to be your prayer. The way you move toward your calling is to start following Jesus. And if that's your prayer today, I want to invite you just to say a prayer with me. It's a prayer of faith. It's a prayer of surrender. It's what I prayed when I was 17 years old. I'm going to give you that opportunity today. If that's your desire today to start following Jesus, just pray this with me in your heart. Just say, Jesus, today I surrender my life to you. Today I give my life completely over to you. I believe that you are the Son of God who came and died for me so that I could have a new life, so that I could have my sins forgiven. Forgive me of my sin. Today I believe that Jesus, you rose again so that I could have a new future and a new life. Today I give my life to you. God, whatever you want me to do for the rest of my life, it's yours. Now, as we're still praying, I know many of you in here have prayed that before. But I also believe that the Spirit of God has been speaking to many of you here today about your purpose, your calling, not your business, not your job, not your family dynamic. I'm talking about your calling, your God-given divine purpose. If God's speaking to you about that, I want to pray for you and that God would begin to reveal, even in these weeks that we're doing, reveal that next step for you in understanding your calling. If that's your desire today, you say, I feel like God's speaking to me about wanting to know my purpose in a deeper way. Would you just lift your hand, hold your hand up while we're praying? I want to pray for you. Just lift your hand up if that's you. There's many of you. Okay. Father, I pray right now for every hand raised. I pray right now, God, for every person here in this moment. I pray, God, for every person today that's in a place of saying, God, I want to know my purpose. I want you to reveal your calling to me in my life. God, I pray that you would begin in this season. God, this season, I pray they begin to see a picture of the life that you have for them, the calling that you have over their life, the giftings you put inside. I pray you help them to draw it out. The deep well that's inside of them from your spirit, God, it would just begin to flow out of them. I pray, God, as they pursue after you, after they run after you in this year, God, if we pursue you, I just pray, God, that you begin to show us.
Thanks so much for tuning into this message. I hope that it encouraged you and inspired your faith. If God is doing something in your life, would you take a moment and let us know? We want to connect with you and we want to be able to pray for you. All you have to do is shoot us an email to hello@thex.church, or you can always send us a DM on one of our social media platforms. And if you know somebody that would also be encouraged by this very message, why not take a moment and just share it with them right now? And as always, I want to say thank you to every single person who so generously financially supports this ministry so we can continue to get messages like these out to people all over the world. We believe God is building something special and you're a significant part of it. Until next time, have a great day.